Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has dissolved the six-member war cabinet in Israel and is now expected to hold consultations about the Gaza war with a small group of ministers. It's unclear, meanwhile, whether today's pause in military activity around an important border crossing into Gaza is holding. The Israeli military announced this pause from early morning to early afternoon around the crossing known as Kerem Shalom to allow more aid into Gaza. James Elder is UNICEF spokesperson. He's in central Gaza today, and he's been telling me what this pause would mean.
Any pause in bombardments is good for children. Any pause. There is no doubt on that. It has been utterly relentless these last few days, both in terms of just the sheer intensity of bombardments and then the result of that. I've just been back in hospitals, again seeing children with these horrendous missing limbs and so on from attacks. So anything is good. Whether it's making a difference yet, it's just too early to see. We need better conditions to bring aid in. There is no doubt, Carol. But then it's got to be delivering it safely. So if this works, it's part of it. We need better security and improved access. So it's too early right now to see because it was quite confused messaging yesterday. But yes, anything to improve aid getting in is useful. But then there is much more than just getting in. You know, Israel is the occupying power, has that legal responsibility to make sure it's safely distributed on the ground. That is absolutely not happening. So Gazans have had their hopes dashed many, many times, Carol. So it's going to be important to see how and when this gets implemented on the ground.
And you are trying to bring in nutritional and medical aid. Just tell us about the challenges that you're facing in getting the aid across the strip once it gets in.
Look, there are many, UNICEF, because UNICEF's mandate is so broad. We're doing nutritional supplies for children, and that's the most severely malnourished children. That's life-saving supplies. It's medical supplies. This frightening number of people lost their homes. It's quite hard to give a sense, Carol, of just how hot it is now. And Gazans, you know, they're used to having homes with a sea breeze or ceiling fans. They are now in tents on sandy areas in sweltering heat. So tents are important. So every bit of aid we try to distribute is critical. But we face restrictions everywhere. I'm just talking to colleagues now who've had another convoy unable to move just a few days ago. I think it was Wednesday. I was with a UNICEF convoy and we had a truck and it was medical supplies and it was nutritional supplies, life-saving supplies, Carol, for 10,000 children. We'd done all the paperwork. We got to the military checkpoint. It was confusion over whether we were allowed to have a closed truck or not. Our paperwork said truck. They said van. A lot of he said, she said. We spent 8 hours, Carol, 8 hours waiting at military checkpoints. In the end, that truck was denied entry. Those 10,000 children did not see those supplies that they needed. This is not new. We are talking about dozens and dozens of denials and restrictions over the last 8 months. When you combine that with the ferocity of this bombardment, that's why you are starting to see children dying, not only from the intensity of the attacks from the air, but also from malnutrition on the ground.
You mentioned earlier that you visited a hospital this morning in central Gaza. Can you tell us a bit more about what you saw there?
It's harrowing. I mean, so I as soon as you walk in, you are meeting children who have had, well, today was amputees, who've had limbs blown off. So I'll try and return to their names. They're sitting with a little boy and he was just angry. He's just so angry. This was now a week or so ago, but he's lost his right arm and his right leg. And he needs to get out. He can't get out. The Rafah crossing is closed. A little girl who lost her vision, her sister's got head wounds. Another boy had also lost his right arm and, again, his right leg. These are commonplace. These are children whose life has irrevocably changed. I sit with one of these children, Carol, and you hear their story and you hear what happened, how they woke up suddenly under rubble and next thing, there they were. Another boy was just walking to get food in Khan Yunis, a neighbouring city, and he walked across an unexploded bomb. That's also everywhere. And then here are these children sitting in a hospital bemused by this. They're traumatised. They're getting the best care they can, but they know the best care is outside of this hellscape. And this is a scene I see everywhere, and one of these children should be too much. The idea that we've now got thousands probably of children with amputations, the idea that there are 15,000 children killed. There is a great risk now, I think, Carol, that people are becoming desensitised to this. So this is becoming normalised, but there is nothing normal about an 8-year-old girl having an arm blown off. There's nothing normal about children being unable to speak because of the bombardments, about 9 out of 10 children not getting the food they need, about a grandmother queuing all day for her one shower of a fortnight. There is nothing normal about the constant fear civilians are going through day after day here in Gaza.
Now, this tactical pause seems to suggest that the Israeli military recognises the need for aid to get in urgently, if not Benjamin Netanyahu, who has questioned this. How much more aid do you need and how quickly?
We need huge amounts of aid. We need huge amounts of aid to come in. We need the restrictions removed, and then we need the safe passage of it. Again, it's critical for people to understand that there is a legal responsibility on Israel as the occupying power to facilitate that aid. That has disappeared for us. This is, it's like chaos has been sown. It's very, very difficult to deliver aid, both in the sheer density of people, the desperation of people. If you look at just numbers, because everyone apparently loves the numbers games of trucks, but this should not be he said, she said. This is about evidence on the ground. And in May, humanitarian agencies were able to get in half as many trucks, half as many as April, and April wasn't enough. And that, of course, is because, Carol, in May we had the offensive in Rafah, the much threatened, but the thing we hoped would never happen. And it was, remember, quote-unquote, a limited offensive. Well, that limited offensive has kept the Rafah crossing, the humanitarian lifeline to Gaza, that's kept that closed ever since then. That limited, quote-unquote, offensive has meant that a million more people had to move for the third, fourth. I met someone today who'd moved for the eighth time. Okay. So we need a lot more aid getting in. We need a safer environment for it. And that means also safety where humanitarian workers aren't being killed when they try to deliver it.
You mentioned the heat, James. How hot is it there today?
I sat in a tent with a family earlier and had a thermometer. It said 55 degrees. So every day is mid-30s. That doesn't sound too bad. Maybe that sounds like a nice day if you're in Ireland, but it's mid-30s. But it's highly humid. And again, a Gazan family would normally be in their apartment. They'd have their ceiling fan. They'd have a cross breeze. They have none of that. They are in tents side by side. Most of these tents don't have ventilation. They're on sand. So it's a sweltering heat without the access to water.
James Elder, UNICEF spokesman, talking to me earlier.